Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's Global Domains Division Update webinar. I'm Nicole Davenport, ICANN's new GTLD Communication Manager. Before we begin our discussion, I'd like to cover a few logistics. This webinar is being recorded. Recordings and supporting materials will be published on the new GTLD microsite. The running time of the webinar is 60 minutes. We'll start with a presentation and end with a question and answer session. You can ask a question via the Adobe Connect questions and comments pod or through the teleconference. Dial-in numbers can be found online at http://newgtlds.icann.org/webinars. The conference ID is GDD. To enter the question queue, dial star 1. To exit the queue, dial star 2. Please make sure that your phone is not on speaker when you ask a question. Now that we've covered logistics, I'd like to take a minute to set the stage for today's webinar. ICANN has been holding regular webinars geared toward new GTLD applicants since 2012 to ensure they have the information required to progress through the program. With more than 250 new GTLDs delegated, we're now expanding the scope to include subject matter of interest to the broader domain name industry. Without further ado, I'd like to turn it over to Christine Ouellette and team to discuss the new GTLD program.
Thank you, Nicole. Hello, everybody. This is Christine Ouellette. You have the agenda on the Adobe. We will be presenting information and updates regarding the new GTLD program, as well as registry operations and topics of interest. I'll be covering the program pipeline. Trang Nguyen will be talking about contracting and GAC advice. Russ Weinstein will be discussing string contention and resolution. Krista Papik will join us to talk about registry services. And Francisco Arias will be updating us on name collision. We'll then move to a Q&A session. Since we have 60 minutes for this webinar, we have endeavored to provide in the presentation key updates. So we look forward to your questions at the end. Next slide. Thank you, Nicole. The new GTLD pipeline, as you can see, has moved forward in the last month or two since Singapore meeting. We are down to two applications in evaluation. In fact, last week we published the final initial evaluation report. Long beyond when we first anticipated that would be done, but it's great to wrap up that phase of work. We have two applications in extended evaluation. As we you see for contracting, we've invited over 1,100 applicants and applications into contracting, and we have 624 that are not yet eligible. Most of those are due to contention resolution as well as GAC advice. To date, of the 1,123 applicants invited into contracting, we've received responses from 559 applicants. We are still awaiting response to those contracting invitation requests from 564 applicants. So over 50% of those applicants have not responded. The average number of days for that outstanding invitation is over 200 days right now. So those 564 applicants have been invited to contracting over 200 days ago on average. Contracts signed. As of last Friday, we signed 414 contracts with 145 in process. In addition to the 414 contracts we've signed, we also have 66 registry agreements which have been sent to applicants waiting for signature. 29 of those applicants in contracting phase have non-compliant COIs. They've all been notified of the issues with their COIs or letters of credit, and we're working through those issues. And you see the other categories. Some are in negotiation. We're working with the applicants who have submitted incomplete responses to the CIR, and the 17 in contracting mean that they're within our typical 3-week processing cycle for contracting. As we look ahead to pre-delegation testing, the next phase, 358 applicants have passed, registry operators have passed pre-delegation testing. 56 are in process. Of those 56, 26 applicants, registry operators, have been invited to schedule their PDT appointments. Those invited, on average, have been invited over 50 days ago. So they have not scheduled their pre-delegation testing appointment in the last 50 days on average. We've delegated 272 new GTLDs with 86 in process. I want to particularly bring to your attention that of those 86, 56 are pending onboarding, one phase or another. So those items in red, those applicants who have not responded to their contracting information request, who have not signed the registry agreement we sent out, not scheduled pre-delegation testing, or have not completed pending onboarding, those are all activities in which we are waiting for the applicant or the new registry operator to take action. In fact, the new GTLD program team and registry operations team, we have capacity in excess of what we are currently being asked to do. So we don't have operational bottlenecks at this point. We're really waiting for applicants to take action and to move the program forward. I'm going to turn this over now to Trang and the team, and we'll be talking about some of the upcoming activities that we hope will spur applicants to progress and move forward through the program. I'll turn it over to Trang.
Thank you, Christine. Unlike previous webinars, I'm not going to spend a lot of time today talking about contracting stats because the pipeline did provide some of those numbers, and we do publish contracting stats every Friday on the microsite. In this portion of the webinar, I will cover some content meant to address questions that we have received, contracting-related questions that we have received. With regards to Specification 13, on March 26, the NGPC passed a resolution approving two versions of Specification 13. Version 1 is without the provision allowing a DOT brand registry operator to designate up to three ICANN-accredited registrars to serve as exclusive registrars, and a Version 2, which does include this provision. The NGPC then asked the GNSO to comment on whether or not this provision is in line with its policy recommendations. On May 19th, the GNSO informed the NGPC that the provision is inconsistent with recommendation number 19. However, given the unique and specific circumstances, the GNSO does not oppose the inclusion of this provision in Specification 13. So given that the NGPC has already approved this version of Specification 13 that includes this provision, there's no further action required on the NGPC's part. ICANN staff is currently implementing the Specification 13 that does include this provision. So what this means is if you apply for a Specification 13 and ICANN determine that you qualify as a DOT brand TOD, you will receive a Specification 13 that includes this provision. The process as well as the application for Specification 13 are currently posted on the microsite, and the link is provided here on this slide. Let's talk about the intersection between Specification 13 and Code of Conduct. If a Specification 13 is granted, it will include an exemption to the Code of Conduct. So really, there is no need to submit both a Specification 13 application and a Code of Conduct exemption request. You only need to submit an application for Specification 13. If ICANN receives both an application for Spec 13 as well as an exemption, a request for exemption to the Code of Conduct, we will only process the application for Spec 13. We will not process the request for Code of Conduct exemption. Now, in the case where, say, a registry operator requests an exemption to the Code of Conduct, ICANN grants it. And then 3 months later, that same registry operator submits an application for Specification 13. And at that time, if ICANN determine that that registry operator qualifies as a DOT brand TOD, we will grant them a Specification 13, but the previously granted Code of Conduct exemption will be voided upon the effective date of the Specification 13 that ICANN gives that registry operator. And Specification 13 henceforth will govern any exemption to the Code of Conduct. Next, please. We received quite a few questions with regards to the 9-month deadline to execute the registry agreement. So I'm going to talk about that in the next couple of slides here. So the earliest expiration of the 9-month deadline to execute a registry agreement is October 29th. That is approximately about 5 months from now, and we believe that that is adequate time to execute a registry agreement. Currently, it is taking applicants about 3 months to execute an agreement, and that is from the point in time where we receive a response to the CIR until when the registry agreement is fully executed. So if you haven't already done so, I would strongly encourage you to respond to the contracting invite immediately to prevent missing this 9-month deadline. Christine covered in the pipeline chart that there are about 560 or so applicants who have not responded to the contracting invite yet. So if we start to receive responses in bulk, we are going to be processing them by priority number. So keep that in mind, and it's all the more reason to respond immediately to the contracting invite so that you get in the queue. We also got questions with regards to how long is it taking to execute a registry agreement. So for all of the contracts that we have signed thus far this year, so all contracts executed since January 1st of 2014, 25 of them were executed within the 3-week RA execution cycle time. 75% of them took longer than 3 weeks. On average, 75% of them took 3 months to execute. So keep in mind that that's also just an average. For some applicants, it is taking longer than 3 months. The message here is respond to the CIR invitation as soon as possible. There's only about 5 months left to execute a registry agreement. Respond immediately, to prevent risking missing the 9-month deadline. And for those who are wondering about requests for extension to the 9-month deadline, what the guidebook says is that in order to qualify for the extension, the applicant must demonstrate to ICANN's reasonable satisfaction that it is working diligently and in good faith towards successfully completing the steps necessary for entry into the registry agreement. If ICANN receives a request for an extension to the 9 months, we will examine all of the facts and circumstances as it relates to the contracting process for that TOD to determine if the applicant has worked diligently and in good faith towards successfully completing the steps necessary to enter into the registry agreement. Because the facts and circumstances are going to vary from case to case, we cannot at this point provide you with an exhaustive list of the things that we are going to be looking at. But we will be reviewing all of the available information if a request is received. With regards to Specification 13, if an applicant qualifies for Specification 13 and meets the applicant guidebook requirements and demonstrates to ICANN's reasonable satisfaction that it cannot enter into a registry agreement before the expiration of the 9-month period because of the fact that the final form of Specification 13 wasn't finalized until May 12th, we will take that into consideration when receiving requests for extension. If you would like to request an extension to the 9 months, you can complete a request form, which we have posted at the link available on this slide here, and email that form to newgtld@icann.org. As a reminder, the form must be submitted by the contracting point of contact. A quick update on GAC advice. So the GAC has issued additional advice in its Singapore communique. On April 11th, ICANN invited applicants to comment on the communique, and applicants were provided 21 days to do so. The responses have been posted on the microsite at the link there, and they have also been provided to the NGPC for its consideration. On May 14th, the NGPC adopted a scorecard on some of the remaining GAC advice items. And the link to the scorecard with all of the details is on the slide here for your review. I think that's it. Now I'll turn it over to Russ.
Thanks, Trang. So I'm going to talk about the string contention status as well as the contention resolution mechanism, CPE, and auction. So looking at the string contention statistics right now, Start off at the top there is where the string similarity panel provided the preliminary contention sets. We've showed this before. The next set of data is the data we showed at the ICANN 49 meeting in Singapore, where we started breaking out resolved, active, and on-hold sets, both by number of set and number of applications in contention. And then as of 16th of May, we're up to 67 resolved contention sets, 147 active contention sets, and 19 sets on hold. Of those 147 contention sets, 10 of them are in CPE, and 112 have been notified of their intent to auction. So moving along pretty well, getting active contention sets towards resolution. Next, we'll talk about CPE, Community Priority Evaluation. We have 10 applications currently in the evaluation process right now. The current timeline for the evaluations is tracking to about 3 to 4 months. There was a high volume of correspondence related to all the applications, and that process is driving the timeline a little bit, the verification process of those letters of support. But EIU is working to streamline that process as much as they can and take some learning on what we've done in the past and make it better. We're targeting mid-June for the next publication of results. Probably get about half of the results published in the mid-June timeframe before London, and then sometime in July get the balance of those that are currently in evaluation. We have 15 applications still pending eligibility for CPE, and we've done some analysis on those and been working internally on developing what we're calling an opt-in to a CPE invite. So utilizing a slightly modified set of eligibility criteria to facilitate program process. And I'm going to talk about that on the next slide here. So the eligibility criteria for CPE comes from the AGB section 4.2, where it talks about all applications in the contention set completing all previous stages of the program. So this concept is that we would invite or give community applicants the opportunity to receive a CPE invite ahead of all of the evaluation or the eligibility criteria currently outlined, but we think it's still consistent with the criteria of EGB 4.2. We'll use the criteria that all members of the set have completed evaluation, objections, and resolved applicable GAC advice. And this will remove the delays caused indirectly by related activities such as change requests going on in the contention set or accountability mechanisms affecting other members of the contention set, but not affecting the community applicant itself and not changing the fact that contention will exist regardless of the outcomes of those activities. So what we're going to do is we'll send cases to the community applicants and give them the option to begin the CPE invite process. Upon their affirmative response, we'll go ahead and get started with the standard invite process where they'll have the 21 days to elect and pay. We'll post all those on the microsite just like we normally do. On our analysis, about 8 of the 15 applications currently pending eligibility should be eligible for this accelerated invite. And we'll get started on that next week during the regular CPE cycle. On to auctions, we've laid out a graphic here that depicts how many contention sets are in each of the auctions, as well as the number of resolved sets and those not yet eligible. Yesterday, we posted on Monday, we notified all the members of contention sets that we updated the auction rules one more time. The updates were largely real edge case scenarios that we've been doing some simulated auctions in-house with the auction provider and just caught some things that we wanted chewed up before we get into any auctions. So we went ahead and made those changes. No fundamental changes to the auction process or the auction. So the current schedule is published, is the schedule published on May 6th, and that's what's depicted in the graphic. Additionally, we have the schedule advancement request form, so allowing applicants to move their auction date up from what it's currently scheduled at. And also we've posted training videos. Power Auctions put together three different training videos for the applicants and bidders to help prepare them for the various processes they go through for auctions. And what's going on currently, we're on track for that June 4th auction. So we'll have one contingent set of that June 4th auction. There's what we're calling mini mock auctions being coordinated by Power Auctions. So these are practice auctions, and so far they're available to bidders who are designated for either a June or July auction, and we'll keep rolling through these probably about two auctions at a time to ensure that bidders get real comfortable with the system before any auctions take place. And we're still working on the proposal for auctions with contention sets that have indirect contention as well as direct contention, and looks like we're tracking to hopefully have a proposal out in the mid-June timeframe.
Thanks, Russ. We'll turn it over to Krista Papik to present on registry services.
Thank you, Christine, and hello, everybody. This is Krista Papik, Director of Registry Services. Before we get started in the Registry Services update, I just wanted to let everybody know that we'll be reviewing some statistics on the current registry population today. We'll be providing an update on onboarding and how the new registries are proceeding through that process, as well as on the Sunrise and Claims process, or sometimes commonly referred to as CLD startup information. And then I'm also going to provide an update on the GDD portal, the new GTLD Registry Operator Welcome Kit, and an update on the Registry Services team. Next slide, please. So this slide represents all of the GTLDs that are currently contracted with ICANN as of last Friday, May 16th. It includes both legacy TLDs, which is 22, plus the 414 new GTLD registries that have signed contracts with ICANN, for a total of 436 around the globe. We have also indicated where from where in the world these registries come from based on country. Next slide, please. This next slide is showing us what the population of new GTLD registries is, of all GTLD registries with ASCII TLDs as opposed to ASCII TLDs and then IDN TLDs. So currently there are 37 IDN TLDs, which represent 8% of all GTLD registries. Next slide, please. This slide shows us the breakout of GTLDs, community GTLDs, those that are geo and community GTLD, and then sponsored GTLDs, and then, of course, everybody else. Next slide, please. So now I'd like to shift into some updates on what's going on with the new GTLD registries and how they're progressing through registry onboarding, processing, and then Sunrise and Claims or TLD startup information processing. So on this slide, for registry onboarding processing, as we've mentioned previously, there are 414 new GTLDs that have sought new GTLD registry agreements. And of those 414, 322 of them have fully completed onboarding. And then that leaves 92 that have not yet completed onboarding. Of the 92 that have not yet completed onboarding, there are various reasons that they haven't completed onboarding. There are three types of information that have to be provided during onboarding. The contact information for the registry, which is the internal contact information that ICANN just uses to keep to itself to how we communicate and transact with the registry. There is public-facing contact information, and this is the information that gets posted on ICANN.org, where anybody from the public can find out how to come contact these new registries. And then, of course, there's the onboarding information request or the technical setup information. So if any one of these items is incomplete, or a combination of them, then the registry has not yet completed onboarding. And as many of you know, in order to transition to delegation, onboarding must be completed. Next slide, please. So Sunrise and Claims Processing. of the 414 registries that have signed registry agreements, 272 of them are eligible to participate or request sunrise and claim dates. The reason 272 are eligible is you must first be delegated before you can request your sunrise and claim dates. So there's 272 delegated registries or those that are eligible for sunrise and claims. That leaves another 142 that are still not eligible for sunrise. So of the 272 that have been delegated and that are eligible for sunrise, 218 of them have submitted their sunrise and claims information and been approved. If you jump down to the last two lines, then of those, so 218 have been approved. There's 17 current requests that we have here at ICANN that we're working on that request for approval, and there's 37 registries that have not yet submitted their sunrise and claims information. Also, of the sunrise and claims that have been approved, 188 of them are the end date type of sunrise, and 30 of them are start date sunrises. Next slide, please. So of the 218 sunrises that have been approved, I'll talk about some of the statistics about which ones have already finished sunrise and claims and which ones are in process. So of the approved sunrises, there are 119 that have completed sunrise. There are 65 that are currently in sunrise right now. And then there's another 34 that have not yet started sunrise, but their dates are approved. And then of these, there are 23 that have completed the claims period. There are 92 registries that are still in a claims period. And then, of course, there's 103 that have not yet started trademark claims notification. Next slide, please. The Qualified Launch Program. This program was approved by ICANN in April of 2014. This Qualified Launch Program is basically a program that ICANN has put together that allows registries to request that they use their 100 names that they're able to, that in their contract they're allowed to use for the promotion of the GTLD. They can give these 100 names, up to 100 of these names, out to third parties prior to or during sunrise. The under the QLP, the registries are, registry operators, once they're eligible for sunrise, they can request to use the QLP by logging into the GTLD portal, the GDD portal, and when they submit their sunrise information, they can, there's also an option in there under the other periods section to request use of the QLP and to provide dates for that. For those that have already potentially recently submitted their request for sunrise through the GDD portal and would like to request use of the QLP, you can instead just submit a case through the cases work item in the GDD portal requesting use of the QLP and then providing the dates. As of last Friday, ICANN has approved four requests for QLPs. Next slide, please. So the next few slides, I'm just going to provide you with a couple of updates on what's been going on with the Registry Services team and some of the things that we're questions and things we're getting from registry operators. So as many of you know, we launched the GDD portal in March of 2014. The portal is currently available to all new GTLD registry operators. And the functionalities that are currently in the GDD portal are the ability to submit all of your onboarding information, so public contact information, and onboarding information requests, as well as your TLD startup information, so sunrise and claims information. And then also for registries new, to submit cases. The ICANN is in the process of finalizing a roadmap for future iterations of the GDD portal, where we want to be able to include additional features and functionalities as well as other users such as legacy registry operators and registrars. Additionally, I just want to let everyone know that we will be having a GDD portal users workshop at ICANN 50 in London where we'd love to have registries come and talk to us about additional features and functionalities they'd like to see so we can start capturing some of those requirements that we, you know, haven't thought of ourselves. Next slide, please. The new GTLD Registry Operator Welcome Kit. We finalized the first iteration of the Welcome Kit and sent it out to all new GTLD Registry Operators who had signed a contract in April 2014. So anybody who had signed a contract up to that point got a Welcome Kit. The first iteration of the Welcome Kit covers TLD startup and onboarding and basically the information and steps that a registry needs to take to get from signing their contract to general availability. So many of the registries that receive this information have already completed one or more of those steps. However, we wanted to make sure that everybody did receive a welcome kit. We've been working on the next iteration of the welcome kit, which is going to include additional information such as ongoing operations and really what the registry needs to do or be thinking about as they move from this initial launch phase into the go-forward operations of the business, as well as ICANN's role and guidance for addressing common challenges. We are expecting that we would have the second iteration ready sometime in the June-July timeframe, and then we would, of course, send that out to all existing new GTLD registries at that time. For the way that it works also is every week that we sign new registry agreements, usually those are signed on Thursdays, and usually on Friday we will send out a welcome kit to all of those newly signed registries. So as people are signing contracts, they'll get the welcome kit and the most latest version of it. Next slide, please. Finally, I just wanted to provide everybody with an update on the registry services team. As many of you know, the team's been growing over the past year or so. So we've added three new people to the team since the Singapore meeting. We've added Dennis Chang, who is based in the Los Angeles office. Many of you already know Wendy Profit and Ann Yamashita, who have been with the team for a while. We've added two people to the Istanbul hub office, Mert Saka and Aijigal Teksay. And then finally, many of you again know Han Chuan Lee, who is in our Singapore office. And we are close to not super close, but getting closer to filling this last position in the Singapore office so that there's additional support in that region. And with that, I thank you, and I will turn it over to Francisco.
Thank you, Krista. So I'm going to give a short update on the NN Collision Mitigation Plan. As some of you may know, we had the NN Collision Occurrence Management Framework, a draft of it for public comment since February. The reply period closed on 21st April. We got some late comments in the forum. We had close to 30 comments varying in the different directions on the topic. Short summary of the draft framework is that we should reserve core, home, and mail, not delegate these strings forever, and that newly delegated TLDs should do a 120-day no activation period for second-level domain names under the TLD. And also during that period, they should introduce some wildcard records to point to a special address to make things break, let's say, for those that are using this newly delegated TLD or a name under that, so that they will realize that something is wrong and they need to change their configuration. Similarly, for already delegated TLDs, by the time the proposal is approved, if approved, the TLDs will be required to do a similar measure, but in this case, no wildcard records. This will be only for the names that are in the SLD block list, the TLD will be requested to introduce A records. These are IPv4 records and SRB records in the under the TLD, but only for the names in the SLD block list. So after this 120-day period, the TLD will be free to activate names in this SLD block list. Remember that this rule, it's only about activating names. It's not about registering or allocating names. Names could, even in the SLD block list, can still be allocated, just they cannot be put in DNS during this period of time. So where are we now on, in regards to the draft that went for public comment? We are working on an updated version, or I should say GIS, the contractor that we have working on this, they are working in an updated version of the report considering the public input provided. We hope to have that in the next few weeks, to have that out. And then the next step is for ICANN to produce a proposal based on this advice and the public comment received for the consideration of the board new TLD program committee, which then can make a decision on whether to accept this proposal or not. That is the best timeline we have now. We don't have specific dates yet on this, since there are many things involved in the process, so we don't have specific dates to provide. This is all I have regarding the collision, so I'm going to turn the microphone to Nicole for the Q&A portion of the webinar. Thank you.
Thank you, Francisco. I'd like to inform everyone that the Global Domains Division will be hosting a variety of sessions at ICANN 50 in London at the end of June. We encourage you to participate in person or remotely. All materials and recordings will be available on the ICANN 50 meetings website for those who are unable to attend. As Francisco mentioned, that concludes the presentation portion of our webinar, so I'd like to open it up for questions and answers. We received questions in advance of the webinar and did our best to provide answers during the presentation. However, if you've submitted a question prior to the webinar but would like further clarification, please rephrase the question before posing it so that our subject matter experts can provide an appropriate answer. We have a limited period of time for questions and answers today, so we're enacting a few guidelines to ensure that everyone has an opportunity to get the answers they're most interested in. Participants are limited to one question at a time and may follow up with one question or response after an ICANN team member has provided an answer. Those with multiple questions, we ask you to plan on queuing up again after delivering each question. If your question is not answered during the webinar, please submit it directly to our customer service team through one of ICANN's portals or by emailing customer service. With that, I'd like to turn it over to the operator to take our first question.
Thank you. Our first question is from Andrew Merriam of Staff Level Design. Your line is open.
Hi there, Christine and everyone. It's Andrew. I'm actually calling on behalf of NTEG. We submitted a number of questions ahead of the webinar, and we didn't hear any of them answered. So I actually have four. I don't know if it's okay if I read all four of them out now or if I should do the one-by-one approach.
Hi, this is Christine. Unfortunately, we did not get those questions, so I apologize for not responding to them. Why don't you go ahead with the first question, and we'll see how others, if we have others in the queue, and go from there.
Okay, so the first one is, I'm just going to read them verbatim, so if there's any confusion, we can figure that out. We found through the media that the SLA monitoring provider has been changed from Zabbix to INOC. Will there be an impact to when ICANN will be able to properly provide SLA monitoring? And since registries are required to communicate every subcontracting arrangement, wouldn't the communication from ICANN to affected parties, including but not limited to registries, prior to such contract be in order? Will this contract be available for public comments? And finally, aren't RFPs like those published on the site the process for selecting such vendors?
So I think there were multiple questions buried there. If you submit those in writing, we can get you a further, a more clear answer. But just my short answer is Zabbix is still the provider of the SLA monitoring system. INOC is providing network operation center capabilities for 24/7 monitoring of the alerts from the SLA monitoring system. So there are two separate capabilities. We haven't changed the Zabbix provider. That's the short answer. But if you submit that in writing, we'll get all of those multiple questions responded to.
Okay, thanks.
Do we have others in the on the phone queue? Okay.
We have... I'm sorry.
Go right ahead. Thank you, operator.
Okay, thank you. We do have two additional questions in queue over the phone. Our next question is from Ray Fassett of Dot Jobs. Your line is open.
Great. Thank you very much. I just want to make sure I understand that, you know, ICANN has been very clear that any applicant executing the registry agreement without first receiving ICANN approval for exemption to Spec 9 is required to abide by Spec 9, which makes sense. ICANN created a mechanism for applicants to submit for the Spec 9 exemption, and on March 18th posted these for 30-day public comment, which for these closed over a month ago. So my question is, has ICANN approved or declined any Spec 9 exemption requests for code of conduct to date? And for any applicant that is otherwise eligible to execute the registry agreement, why is ICANN holding up the approval of the Spec 9 exemption request?
Thank you, Ray. We are processing requests for code of conduct, and I believe we have published, we are in the process of sending those approved exemption requests to applicants. We're timing them with the, we're processing them both in priority order as well as when they were submitted. The reviewing the eligibility, considering the public comments. So it's quite an extensive process to review all of that material. Going forward, those will be sent out with the for new applicants, new registry operators getting their registry agreement. Those requests will be code of conduct exemptions will be included with their weekly in the weekly registry agreement distribution. Train, do you want to have something further to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to also add that concurrently we are receiving quite a few applications for Specification 13, so there's a lot of things that we're juggling and trying to true up, but we internally have been reviewing and have some notifications that are getting ready to go out to the applicants, as Christine said.
And so, Trang, if I'm correct, those applicants who have indicated that they are applying for Spec 13, the brand agreement as well, they are... we're voiding or eliminating their code of conduct exemption request. So we're processing the Spec 13 request ahead of that. Thank you, Ray, for that question.
Our next question is from Jennifer Goldberg of Fairwind Partners. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I have a couple questions regarding receiving an extension to the contracting window for brand applicants.
Go ahead with your first question. We're going to take one question from everybody in the queue, but you're welcome to get back in.
Okay, thanks.
Jennifer.
Is a possible extension of the contracting window to February 12, 2015 distinct from the possible nine-month extension provided to applicants that are working in good faith towards execution of the registry agreement? So does this mean brand applicants can potentially be given an extension of up to 9 months beyond the already stated February 12th extension?
So what we've stated in Trang's presentation is that all applicants who were invited to contracting prior to 29 January have 9 months from that date to 29 October to enter into a registry agreement. Trang presented, and we did address the questions presented by Fairwinds, and Trang addressed those in her presentation today. So she did outline in her slides the that all the entire situation, including the fact that they were an applicant for requesting the brand specification 13 agreement would be taken into consideration for extension. But there is no default and de facto February extension.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you. We'd like to switch over to questions from the Adobe question and answer pod. At this time, we're also going to make the presentation available for everyone to download. Josh, if you could please make that switch. Thank you.
I'll read the questions and ask the team to chime in with responses. The first question, I'm going to attempt to take these in order, that they were submitted, was from Donna Austin from ARI. And it says, what if Spec 13 is not approved? Can the registry operator apply for an exemption to the Code of Conduct? Trang?
Thanks, Christine. Yes, the answer is yes. That is correct. You can apply for a Code of Conduct exemption request if the Spec 13 is not approved.
Thanks. Thank you, Donna, for the question. Ryan W. asks, do you anticipate making a change to the CIR to reflect Specification 13, specifically the Code of Conduct exemption request? If it's covered under Spec 13, will the CIR be updated? I think there he's referring to the online form.
Thank you, Ryan, for the question. What we're doing is we're in the process of assessing the impact and the benefits of updating that CIR form to include an option for applicants to request Spec 13. We want to make sure that if we are going to be undertaking any additional work to that form, that the that there is benefits to the applicants and that the process is streamlined. So we're making that assessment right now, and we'll take your questions and comment into consideration. Thank you.
Okay, one more question here. Next question is from Steiner. What is the estimated time for PDT from the scheduled date to notification of successfully passed pre-delegation testing? Russ, can you take that one?
Sure. The typical cycle time for PDT from the appointment start date to the delivery of results is generally 3 to 4 weeks.
Great. Thank you, Russ. Thank you, Steiner, for the question. And we're going to go back to the phone and the operator.
Thank you. Our next question is from Sarah Falvey of Google. Your line is open.
Thanks. I have a question for Francisco about the planned name collision report. Because the report has cascading impacts, particularly on auction timeline, is there a way that you can give us an idea of whether the report is anticipated to be released prior to the London meeting and therefore considered at the London meeting by the board, or whether it's going to happen after the London meeting, which would mean that the now second round of auctions would have to flip again to August?
Thank you, Sarah. This is Francisco. Our aim is to have the a proposal in front of the board by London.
Russ, do you want to take the auction portion of that question?
Sure. So I did miss this in my my section, but given the progress of the name collision management framework, we're planning to update the auction schedule to honor the requests. The postponement requests of those who requested to be postponed until after the name collision framework was finalized. So those currently slated for the July auction that had that request will be rescheduled for the August auction.
Thanks, Sarah, for that question.
Our next question is from Donna Austin of ARI Registry Services. Your line is open.
Donna, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Ah, now we can. Thank you, Donna.
Sorry, I was talking to myself. Just a question. I noticed that GDD now stands for Global Domains Division. When was the change made from Generic Domains Division, and what was the reason for the change?
Thanks, Donna. So I believe it was sometime around the Buenos Aires meeting we clarified that the G for in GDD stands for global, and it's really to better describe the scope of the division and the audience and community that we serve. Thank you.
Our next question is from Andrew Merriam of Stop Level Design. Your line is open.
Hi again. So this is another NTAG member question, and it has a little bit of background, and then a few questions just around the same topic on RCEPs. So if you'll bear with me, please. Five RCEPs were published April 28th, which triggered the 15-day review period for them. Those RCEPs changed state only on May 16th, which actually violated the review period defined in consensus policy. And during the last registry stakeholder group call, ICANN staff vowed to follow policy deadlines regarding those RCEPs. As of the 19th, those RCEPs updates were still not published on the site, and the public periods were not open. So the questions are, is there a time frame for that to happen? What was the root cause of the failure to provide those on time? What was used to cure the service? And any preventative actions to avoid the same failure in the future? Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew. Again, I know you, NTAG, had a number of questions, and that's a compound question. So if you could submit that in writing, then we could answer that more fully. Krista, is that some can you address Andrew's question in short?
Hey, it's Krista. That is a compound question, and I didn't capture all of it because the phone cut out a little bit. I would first say that people that have specific inquiries about a specific RCEP should contact us. We are processing them and posting them once they are ready to be posted, once they move into the ICANN review stage. We did give a recent presentation on this topic and addressed a lot of those questions that you did have, Andrew, and would be happy to either, you know, respond to you in writing if you want to do that, or we could schedule time with the NTAG to go through the same presentation and Q&A that we did with the registry stakeholder group. Whichever, you know, one of those options you feel is best serves your stakeholders and is most efficient.
Yeah, I think the concern was that the process still wasn't followed, even the process that was outlined on the registry stakeholder group call. So it's just kind of around the timing that you outlined, it still was just a bit off. So we're just trying to clarify and make sure that we're all on the same page going forward. But we'll submit those in writing again. We did submit these in writing ahead of time. I don't know what happened, but we'll dig up that email thread for you all.
Yeah, and just to, I'm sorry, I do want to make sure other people, and this is actually your second chance. We have a queue of people who have been waiting, but I did actually answer those questions on the registry stakeholder group call, and I did talk about the process. We did have some challenges with new staff and fully understanding what the different statuses mean in the system that we use to process RCEPs, and those have since been clarified, and we did also respond to the fact that, yes, we understand what the timelines are and what the statuses mean, and that those will be adhered to going forward. It was human error and a little bit of misunderstanding. So anyway, thank you.
Okay, great. And thank you for your question, Andrew. We'll go ahead and move back to the Adobe comment and question pod.
The next question I have is from Shweta at Radix. Question is, when community applicants are invited to opt in for CPE next week, will contending applicants be notified of this invite? Russ?
Yeah. Hi, Shweta. So I think the applicants, the opt-in portion of it will not be notified to the other applicants, but the actual invite, the opt-in is just requesting the invite to take place, and then the standard invite process will be utilized, and that will be published as usual. Thanks.
Thanks, Russ. Let's see. We had a question from Jacob about auction timing and name collision, which I think we've addressed. Francisco and Russ answered those questions. TLD startup. Craig from FTLD asks, if QLP requests are supposed to be public information, where can they be found? I'm speaking about the request, not the approved QLP addendum. Krista, is that a question you can take?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Christine, and thanks, Craig, for the question. So the QLP, the request comes in through the portal, so it's really just somebody entering dates in the portal. And then once it's reviewed and assuming it's approved, the QLP is then reflected, and the dates that were approved are reflected on the Sunrise page on the new GTLD microsite. If you're trying to identify who's been approved, you can use, well, there's an export function which allows you to export all of the data, or you can just simply do a control F for qualified, and it'll take you to the qualified launch programs that appear on the microsite. Thank you.
Thanks, Krista. Another question came from Alex Howerton. The GDD registry TLD startup information form does not require registry policies, whereas the old form did. Are registry policies still required for approval of launch plans? If so, which ones? Krista?
Thanks, Christine, and thanks, Alex, for the question. Yes, policies are still required. The Rights Protection Mechanisms document, or the RPMs document, lays out all of the requirements of Sunrise and what needs to be provided, and none of that has changed. What needs to be provided is a complete set of registration policies related to the Sunrise, as well as a Sunrise dispute resolution procedure, and SDRP. In the GDD portal, when you're completing the Sunrise information, you are required to submit at least one attachment. There's a validation built into the system that won't allow you to submit without providing an attachment, which would have to be at least these policies. And then when ICANN does its review of the Sunrise information, we check to make sure that all of that information is there. And if we don't, if we see that something's missing, we will come back to you and request the missing information. Thank you.
Thanks, Krista. So I see we have 3 minutes left, and we have far more questions than we can possibly answer in this time frame. So if you get your questions into the chat, if you have not already submitted that, then we will do our best to follow up and make sure that all of the questions are addressed after the webinar. We'll take a couple of more questions that were submitted early in the chat. The next one is also related to TLD startup. Rubens Cole from NIC.BR submitted the question, in the GDD portal, how to specify an infinite claims period? It seems to require a fixed end date. Krista or Karen?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
I can take that. Thanks, Christine. So thanks for the question, Ruben. Yes, you can specify an infinite claims date, but it's a secret way that we do it. You need to utilize the date January 1st, 1938. Don't ask me why. That's the magic date. It's something with the way the programming is developed. This is something that I'm realizing that may have been left out of the GDD portal guidance. So we'll make sure that when we next update the guidance that it includes that, so that you know how to go ahead and do that. But if you are wanting to do infinite claims, you just use the date January 1, 1938. Thank you.
I like the secret date there. So I see that we've got a bunch of questions on name collision that I don't think we can address here. There is one other question about specification 13. Let's take that as our last question. From Michael Fleming, currently an estimated schedule for a TLD to apply for specification 13 and be approved is not reflected with the other steps in the path to delegation. Can ICANN provide an example of how Specification 13 would interact in the path to delegation? Would it cause delay, or can the process of applying for Specification 13 overlap with other steps? So thank you, Michael, for the question. I will turn that over to Trang. Can you attempt to answer that one?
Thanks, Christine. Hi, Michael. Thank you for the question. So just to clarify, the alternate path to delegation is actually not a requirement for contracting. It is for delegation. So you know, if you do not qualify for the alternate path, currently qualify for the alternate path to delegation, it won't prevent you from signing a contract at this point in time. With regards to Specification 13, that can be applied at any point in time after you've been invited to the contracting process. So that can, you know, that can occur along with some of the other steps that you're currently doing. It doesn't have to be waited until after you've executed a contract, or nor would it have any direct impact on the alternate path to delegation or whether or not you qualify for that.
So, we would encourage applicants who are interested in the Specification 13 brand agreement to indicate that and get that moving as part of their contracting information response, so that can run concurrently. I'll also remind everyone that the guidebook calls for applicants or registry operators to have 12 months from the time the registry agreement is signed until their TLD is delegated. So that if you sign the registry agreement and then want to go back and negotiate changes, including Specification 13, that will be also part of the timing included in that 12 months to delegation. So we're over time now. I'll turn it back to Nicole. Thank you.
So we just have one quick clarification that we need to make regarding the secret date, Krista.
Thanks, Nicole. The secret date is so secret I provided the wrong year. It's not 1938, it's 2038. So January 1st, 2038. Thank you, and sorry for the miscommunication.
And with that, we'd like to close out today's webinar. Thank you so much for participating. As always, we're interested in your feedback, so please send us to GDD-communications. Please send us any feedback you have about the webinars, the format, anything you've heard today, and we'll take that into consideration. Thanks so much, and take care.